development. And we've got a number of work sessions today, and I'm looking for Senator Nelson to come in, but I think what we'll do is we will start with opening a work session on Senate Bill 16 first. So, Teresa, you want to go over this one for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 16 was introduced by the Interim Joint IMT Committee on behalf of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. The original version of the bill requires that the Public Utility Commission administer laws relating to telecommunications in a manner that is consistent with the goal of promoting access to broadband services. You have -1 amendments in front of you that replaces the bill. What 16 will do, if you adopt the amendments, will require the Department of Education to transfer once annually funds from the school technology accounts to the Oregon Public Education Network for the purposes of supporting broadband services in our K-12 school system.
Okay, thank you. Do we have anybody besides Senator Nelson who wanted to address these?
Yes, we do have Jim Rose, who is the director of OPEN, that's available for questions. And you do have a one-page sheet in front of you that explains the amendments and background on the...
Mr. Rose, would you come up for a moment? Since the amendment is new to us, would appreciate just give us your name for the record and give us your brief analysis of this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Rose. I reside at 17619 Inkster Drive in Sherwood, and I am the director of the Oregon Public Education Network. I'm here to testify in support of the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 16. In 1989, Senate Bill 622 set up this fund, which was used to provide support to each school district for technology. In 2001, $25,000 was distributed to each school district as required by Senate Bill 622. The fund remained as a receptacle of funds from the utilities. However, the distribution requires $25,000 per district, which necessitates a fund balance of nearly $5 million. Currently, the fund has approximately $165,000, and this has grown over the last 3 years. There currently is a big need among schools to expand their bandwidth to allow student access. The proposed amendments to Senate Bill 16 are consistent with the intent of Senate Bill 622 and will allow us to immediately and on an annual basis assist districts expand their bandwidth, allowing schools to access online distance learning opportunities and testing. The amendments provide for the annual distribution of these funds to the Department of Ed, as you've heard, and will help us assist the districts with expanding their infrastructure needs. The amendments are pretty straightforward and have the support of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council and Quest. I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Mr. Senator Nelson, would you please come forward? These are amendments drafted to request of Senator Nelson. We're on Senate Bill 16, and then we'll go back to 15.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Nelson, State Senator from Senate District 29, and just listening to the testimony from Senate Bill 16, amendments are, I think this serves a good purpose to have that excess money there. Schools do need they do need it. They can use it for this kind of activity. So very much in support of what Mr. Rose has been proposing.
Thank you, Senator. And, of course, to remind everyone in the room who doesn't know, Senator Nelson was a real driver behind original Senate Bill 622 that chairing the Business Committee in 1999. Now it seems so long ago. Questions for either gentleman?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
So this is there's $165,000 in the account now, so we're looking at a transfer, and it would go to the Department of Ed. So does this bill then need to run from here down to Ways and Means to help them facilitate how the money works?
I suppose it does. I hadn't really thought of that, Senator. Mr. Chair, sorry, I suppose that's something we should look at.
We don't. Good question, Senator. We don't have a referral on it,
no.
But we could, at the wish of the committee, do whatever you would prefer.
Nor do we have a fiscal statement.
No, the fiscal does have the amendments, but I don't have a formal opinion on that. But they did suggest that perhaps we would do that because of the significant amount of funds that we transfer.
I think that would be a wise thing to do then. Other questions? Okay, we're in a work session.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 16.
Senator Starr has moved the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 16. Discussion. Objection. So ordered.
Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move Senate Bill 16 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 16 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion. Objection. So ordered. Okay, and we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 15. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Nelson, State Senator from District 29. Senate Bill 15 has been brought to you through the Interim Committee on Information Management and Technology for Oregon Telecommunity, and by at the request of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. And this bill is to extend the sunset on the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. Just some history about this. This, a lot of these folks that are on this Telecommunication Coordinating Council are the fellows that are the people that were involved with Senate Bill 622 back in 1999. So I have a little bit of emotional attachment. I'll admit my bias, or I have a conflict of interest, or whatever you want to call it.
But and we have some Kleenex up here if the tears start to blow.
I know, it's getting pretty bad. But if you look at the bill, under Section 2, I mean, they're talking about really a cross-section of the entire state. Central Oregon Coast, Eastern Oregon South, Frontier Network, Gorge, Lane and Klamath Counties, North Coast, South Coast, Southern Oregon, and then the governor appoints some other members so that you have a pretty broad group of people. There has been some question, basically for the telecom companies, that say, well, we really don't like this. You know, we want these guys to go away. But really, they do a lot of good. I think maybe we cause the telecom, they cause the telecom companies to actually work a little bit because they represent consumers. Their basic focus is to provide access, and now they're really focusing on broadband right at the moment. And they do some very good things. It's a very, very broad group of folks. I think it's nonpartisan. And from my viewpoint, they truly represent the consumer, because what they're trying to do is to create access for the last mile. That's really what they're after. I mean, our 622, we were able to build the rings, the fiber optic rings. What we need now is to get out to the communities, to the individual houses. And this is what this group is really focused on. And I don't think it hurts to have the telecoms have a little bit of a push once in a while, because what we're trying to do is to get people to come out there and actually help us out. And some of my parts of the state, sometimes you can't make a business case for the telecoms to come out there, so they ignore us by and large. And I think that's true of probably most of the rural parts of the state. And they have to make that business case. So this is a group of folks that will come up with maybe some pretty pushing the envelope ideas, but I think that's what we need to have in this process. On page 2, there's another issue here on line 27, where maybe paid expenses of funding is available from contributions under subsection 15. The history of that is this group of folks has really been paying their own expenses all along. This is not a requirement to any group that they would be paid, but if you go down to Section 15 on line 40, it indicates that they may accept contributions of funds, assistance from the United States or its agents or any other source, public, private. Basically, what they're hoping to do is get some grants and things of that nature, and maybe if there's some point in time when the state had some money, but it's not a requirement that the state actually pay them any money, and I don't know if there's 20 of them, I don't know how much they spend a year. Maybe they spend $1,000 a year of their own money going to these meetings. The other point that I do want to bring out is the fact that besides coming to the Interim Council Technology Committee, they with some recommendations, they are able to coordinate groups. And in the last session, or last interim, they coordinated a healthcare group. And they're working on, with the governor's office, to create this ability to have greater access to health care in the state of Oregon. And to me, that's in the interim, that's been their biggest accomplishment, basically, because they were able to get the medical people, as Senator Mona Anderson understands, you know, getting those people to call them together and say, okay, we have to do more distance medical care access, that type of thing. So from my viewpoint, I would hope that the committee would look at this and say, well, you know, this is a worthwhile group. We should continue their existence. I think it continues until 2010, and then we'll have another look at it.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. And I do appreciate the fact that these people all serve voluntarily. Any questions for Senator Nelson? We heard this bill before. Senator Starr?
Just one. Who provides staffing for this group?
Well, I think the counties do, actually. I think in one of these things that on page 1, the governor shall appoint 2 members to represent the cities of the state, and well, the one before that is the counties of the state on line 22. Basically, the counties and the cities have taken over the staffing portion of this thing, and And they do a lot of it themselves also. I mean, they do a lot of work, basically.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thank you, Senator. Well, we're to work session on the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 15 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 15 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Senator Deckard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I support the motion. One thought I have, and maybe it's something that might be included in the House, is to get someone from the actual urban suburban area, because a lot of the ideas, I mean, from 622 or others, a lot of the ideas, you have a dedicated set rate territory, and so the ratepayers in, I'll just say my neck of the woods and urban suburban have an interest. And if there's going to be rate fluctuation, and usually is on the increase side, to do certain different things, I think they would just have an interest in maybe a seat at the table. And maybe you have some of the telecoms who usually will represent that point of view on the coordinating council, and maybe that accomplishes the goal. But it's just a natural tension that is always there on these questions.
Mr. Chair and Senator, for instance, there's a lady by the name of Kim Hoffman, the OHSU, who represents that particular portion through the medical portion of it. And whether or not, I can't remember if she's actually appointed to the council, but she's very involved in it. The telecoms are all part of the council, too. There's 20 members in this whole thing, and I think they're always invited to all the meetings. They're always saying, okay. And in fact, this group wants them to participate. They want to find the answer someplace along, but I'll make sure that I just take care of them now.
Thank you.
That issue is brought up.
Senator Stern?
Thank you. I just to reiterate, I think what Senator Deckard's heading toward, I think. Now, we had a number of bills that came to us from this council, and yet there wasn't that consensus between the council and the providers, and so it created a problem.
Yeah.
And not a lot of those ideas have progressed because of that. So at the end of the day, we got to get everybody together and make this stuff work. And
I know the Senator Chair and Senator Starr, I know the coordinating council always made the invitation available to the telecoms to come to the meetings. Let's try and solve this problem, because it's all about access. How do you get that last mile, and how do you do it in lots of areas? And I think even the city, there's things that you could even, there's probably what you call the urban areas that don't have access. Mm-hmm. And how do we get that?
Mm-hmm. Well, there is that problem. Canyon Road, cell phones dropping off.
Yes, and me about 65th in the Vanville. Other questions? Okay, we have the bill before us. Further discussion? Any objection? Or Senator Nelson, you want to carry that bill?
Yes.
Okay, we'll close the work session. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 81. Teresa.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Committee Member. Senate Bill 81 is brought to you by the Public Utility Commission. It allows public utilities to charge customers a different rate for electricity if the difference arises from optional schedule or tariff that takes into account a customer's past energy usage and provides price incentives designed to encourage changes into a customer's energy usage. We heard this bill on February the 8th, and you have -1 amendments in front of you from the Citizens Utility Board. And Jeff Bissonnette's here to explain this.
Okay, Mr. Bissonnette, if you want to come forward and explain your amendment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Bissonnette. Actually, although I do work for the Citizens Utility Board, I'm here offering this amendment on behalf of the Fair and Clean Energy Coalition, which is a statewide collaboration of consumer, environmental, and human service agencies. And what the -1 amendments do is actually, it's not a gut and stuff. It actually attaches on to the end of the bill, and seeks to increase resources for low-income bill payment assistance. And this is an idea that has sort of been pushed very strongly from Senator Deckard. And we have been trying to work to find a way to get more resources into the households of low-income Oregonians across the state. We have, in the Senate General Government Committee last week, we had testimony from clients at the Washington County Community Action Agency, Community Action Organization, talk about the desperate need they have for low-income bill payment assistance in their community. Frankly, though, we could have substituted that testimony with human services in East Multnomah County, the Josephine County Community Action Organization, and just about anyone across the state. And what this Dash Amendment does is propose an increase in the current statutory program of $10 million per year for low-income bill payment assistance and increases that to $15 million. That would mean for residential customers an increase of approximately 15 cents, give or take, on the monthly bill. And that would then be a total of somewhere right around 50 cents a month that customers would be paying to increase low-income bill payment assistance for low-income Oregonians. And that is something that that actually is not only saves social costs, but is actually a benefit to ratepayers, because it actually costs more to have people continually being disconnected and reconnected to the system, and the more we can do to keep people connected to the system and keep their lights on, keep their heats on, is a good thing. So we would ask that you support the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 81.
Okay. My first question is, does this change the total amount that is collected from ratepayers? Is this an increase over the current amount or just a change in the distribution?
No, it's an increase in the amount. So right now the amount is $10 million per year, Mr. Chair, and this would increase it to $15 million a year.
Okay. So we have before it's a policy question, so and we'll serve at the will of the committee on this. Questions for Mr. Bissonnette on this? Senator Decker.
And can I just talk for a second? It's not a question, but and I'll pass something out. Mr. Bissonnette's being kind. They supported the idea behind of what I was trying to do with Senate Bill 511, which is in General Government Committee. But if I could pass this out, because here's, to me, the problem, because they brought this as, is this perhaps a better solution? And I guess I'm open to if this is a better solution or not. The bill that I have in General Government takes a portion of the 3% that is on investor-owned utilities, takes the 15%, which was an amendment that Representative Hill and I introduced to Senate Bill 1149, was adopted, and takes that school audit money and puts it into low-income energy assistance. And Mr. Chair, here is the, because I'm open to possible solutions, but I do think this is actually huge, huge problem, that if you look at Oregonians' income in the last 5 or 6 years, it's down. If you look at energy prices in the last 5 or 6 years, they're dramatically up. And if you look at the federal government, the calls on the federal government, we're going to see less and less money going to low-income energy assistance. And so we had very poignant testimony in this committee that Senator Schar sits on about the problem that nearly all of the energy assistance funding that is available at the start of the heating season is gone in January. And so if you have a cold winter, all of us can just simply imagine the strife that is there for families that can no longer heat their homes after January. There are over 10,000 low-income households that had appointments with local agencies through March 2005 just to check and just to see if they had qualified. And those are folks that took the initiative and went out and tried to find a provider of low-income energy assistance. Over 15,000 households are on a waiting list. And so the thing I like about these Dash amendments is that starts cutting down on those 15,000 families in Oregon that are trying to find assistance and are on a waiting list. And every day, Mr. Chair, 1,500 people in Oregon call either a community action agency or other agency on energy assistance. And so, frankly, I didn't know. Prior to about 3 months ago, I just had no idea how big this need was in terms of folks that in a cold winter, and it's usually families, it's usually folks that are really struggling to eat and to make their bill payments. And I was woken up to this fact serving on a community action board, but it really did. It just surprised me how great the need is, and I'm open to how we address it. Either 511 is one route to do it. This is another route. So that's my story. Sorry to ramble on, but it's an issue that I got woken up to.
And quickly, Mr. Chair, the reason that we are proposing this method to address what Senator Deckard is correct in saying is a very serious problem is in Senate Bill 511, our view is that you're pitting sort of schools against low-income people. Senator Deckard doesn't take enough credit. He said he had the money for energy audits. It's actually also for energy conservation projects to help schools use less energy, and that's a very good thing and something in this day of tight school funding dollars. We don't want to see schools pitted against low-income people, and so rather than taking money away from schools and redirecting it, leave that money where it goes. And Senator Metzger is right, we do have a policy issue, and so let's deal with the policy issue straight up and say, you know, should there be more resources for low-income bill payment assistance?
Thank you. Other questions? Okay. I do appreciate what Senator Deckard is doing, and I certainly support that concept. I guess the only thing that I would be concerned about this at the moment with this committee is that and we've posted for work session rather than public, and we don't have the utilities present here to comment on that. And I'm reluctant to, you know, put that out there without having that policy decision on this one, Senator, at the moment, because I wasn't aware of the fact that we would want to have them available. So we have a couple of choices. With the amendment, this would require that the bill go to Ways and Means. That's the first. We have that opportunity and choice. We have a choice to, you know, not insert the amendment and to continue this discussion through the other possible vehicles with this. Or we could take the bill that we've already heard and send that as is. And frankly, again, I would express my great appreciation for the work that you have done, but it's been outside of this committee, and I'm reluctant to do something without having that fully aired here. So it's up to the committee what you would like to do with the amendment. And on this particular bill at this time, keeping in mind we do have other things also. I know, Senator Deckard, we may have some things in revenue and general government. I know we have other things coming over from the House. So what is the pleasure of the committee regarding the amendment? Well, having heard nothing, I think at this point then we'll pass on this amendment, but I don't think that means the committee wants to pass on the issue. But I think under the circumstances, rather than just have a pro forma, you know, passage of something we haven't totally aired, I think that would be proper. Thank you. We'll continue to work on this, though. Senator Deckard.
Sorry to flag. I mean, one thing we could do is give Jeff brought this as, Senator Deckard, here's another way we might be able to get at helping low-income families get heating. One thing we might do is we could repost this Thursday if the chair wanted to and give them enough time to get the utilities. I know he's met with the utilities and see and get their point of view on this.
Do we have the other vehicles available that would work from what you've been working with?
You couldn't do a gut and stuff on 511, which is my bill. And I don't know what the prospects. I mean, Julie from AOI will tell you they don't like 511, the bill that I've introduced in general government. So you kind of have two different ideas out there, none of which seem to be moving with incredible speed right now. So it's up to...
Well, this would be my preference. We are holding a number of bills over, as you know, 1008 and also Senate Bill 671, other ones related to utilities, which this could still work. What I would ask is that you continue to work post-haste with the utilities to see if there is a meeting of the minds, and we would have a vehicle that we are holding over till next week that would be appropriate for that. If the word comes to us that we have a meeting of the minds and then we can air it publicly, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Great.
Is that going to do. So I think what we'll do is we have the base bill in front of us that we have heard before, and I think it would be good to move that forward.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 81 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 81 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion?
I'll be a no.
Okay. Objections? Any objections besides Senator Atkinson? So moved. Anybody would like in particular to carry the bill? Okay, I'll carry that. Okay, I'm going to... I'm sorry, I should have mentioned this first. Senate Bill 151, we're not going to hear today. We're going to hear on Thursday. Apparently there's another issue that Dr. Bates and others have been working on. They believe it would fit within the insurance bill that we're scheduled to hear today. And my understanding is that that would be a consensus that would be brought together for that bill. If, in fact, that consensus is reached, I've agreed to allow the presentation to be made to add that to Senate Bill 151. If for any reason that isn't made, we will move 151 on Thursday with the amendment that we have discussed earlier with John Powell. So that one will be moved to Thursday. And for the moment, I'm going to turn the gavel over to Senator Starr. So.
We will open a work session on Senate Bill 574. We have a dash one amendments. Tracy, you don't want to highlight the amendments?
Yes.
And Mr. Berry, want to come forward.
Vice Chair Starr, committee members, the dash one amendments in front of you are committee amendments on behalf of the Oregon Home Builders Association that address the concerns that came out of the hearing on March 10th. It expands and adds additional provisions to clarify the legislative intent of when the contractor presents information to the deed. It also adds a provision under current statute to allow county clerks to record written warranty agreements established under the measure.
Thank you. Mr. Berry?
Yeah, Scott Berry with the Oregon Home Builders Association. And just a quick summary. This bill addresses when a new house is sold in Oregon, and obviously the first home buyer then understands who that builder is. Unfortunately, too often when the house is sold for a second time or to a subsequent buyer, the name of the home builder or the building company is lost. And Senate Bill 574 allows the builder to record warranty information in the contractor's and the contractor's name with the property, so that that information is not lost to subsequent home buyers. For the builder, this could mean that they are contacted before any legal action could take place on a construction defect issue. And for the homeowner, it provides information they never would have had at their fingertips, and allows them to get a hold of that builder and understand who built their home and perhaps even get some warranty work done on their house that came with the original contract. That information, again, lost to the second and subsequent home buyers. When I left the committee last, I was asked to go work out some of the finer points with the county clerks and also to get some information from the realtors and assure the committee that they were okay. The realtors are, in fact, okay. And I do have actually two letters from the Association of County Clerks saying that with the proposed amendments, they are also okay with the bill. So with that, I would just mention that with me today is Tom Hillier with Davis Wright Tremaine. He's an attorney specializing in real estate law, and he helped us draft the amendments along with Legislative Council.
Are there any questions for either Mr. Hillier or Mr. Berry? Any dash one amendments?
Are we in work session?
We are.
Need dash one amendments.
Senator Atkinson has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 574. Are there any comments?
Well, we should make him, and he's got his lawyer here, we should make him do one question.
Make him sweat it.
Bill into the hour. This is easy work, man.
Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. Senator Atkinson.
Move the bill as amended for the due pass. Right?
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 574 as amended to the floor with the due pass. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
Declare a potential conflict of interest. I have four clients involved in the home building industry.
Senator Atkinson has declared a potential conflict of interest and that he has clients that work in the home building industry. Any other discussion?
Yes.
Senator Morris Anderson.
How are the title folks with the amendment?
Chair Starr, Senator Morris Anderson, we met with the title folks and forwarded this information on to them. Their chief concern, I think, was with the final section in, on page one of the amendments, line 19, B, where it says cease to affect the title to the property 10 years after the date of the instrument is recorded. They just want to make sure the language is in place so that it can properly be removed when that 10 years is up. And we have promised them that we will work with them if necessary, if this language doesn't do it, and we believe it does. But if it comes out that that language does not take care of that concern, then we will address that on the other side.
Is the just follow up? Is there some title people here that have been given the information that can discuss that aspect?
Looks like we have Mr. Monroe standing up in the back of the hearing room.
For the record, I'm Jack Monroe.
Here today on behalf of the Oregon Land Title Association. I'm not sure I caught the.
Yeah, you want to repeat your question?
I was just wondering how, if you have seen the amendment, and if I know that you had had some opposition to the original bill, and I was just wondering how this changed that, if it did.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lana Sanderson, we obviously, as was the case with the sponsors, we've just obviously seen the language. As of a couple of hours ago, and I think, to cut to the essence of it, I think we still have some concerns about whether or not these warranties are in fact title-related documents. And as Mr. Berry, I think, correctly concluded, we also, I think, want to make certain that there's a way to remove these documents from that record at some appropriate time. Because, in fact, all of the other things that end up being recorded that affect titles, such as an easement or a right-of-way or whatever it is, there's a process for vacating them, taking them off, and essentially expunging them from the record. We, however, will evaluate this and have committed to Mr. Berry that we'll work with him on the other side to attempt to deal with any problems that that we might see in this version. So I hope that's responsive to your question.
Yeah.
Senator Monsanto.
Yeah, and I will be a no just to make a statement that this isn't a clean bill.
Very
yeah.
Good. Further discussion? So I have a motion on the floor to send Senate Bill 574 as amended to Senate floor. Let's have a roll call, please.
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Deckard?
Yes.
Senator Mona Sampson?
No.
Senator Starr?
Yes.
Chair Metzger?
Having the required votes, Senate Bill 574 is sent to the floor, and I'll carry the bill. Close the work session on Senate Bill 574, and the committee will stand at ease for a minute.
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. Senate Bill 579 is brought to you, sponsored by Senator Prezansky. The bill requires outfitters and guides to equip boats with throw bags and requires outfitters and guides to require the use of a personal flotation device on Class 3 or higher rapids. It also imposes a civil penalty for noncompliance. It also requires certification in whitewater rescue techniques as part of registration as an outfitter or guide if boats are used to carry passengers on Class 3 or higher rapids. You have in front of you some -2 amendments that came as a result of the work group. To address some concerns that came out of the committee and also from the different stakeholders. What it does is it clarifies language regarding the licensing requirements and outfitting guide. It exempts motorized boats that are inspected by the United States Coast Guard from the measure, such as mail boats that go down the Rogue River, as an example. And it also requires that prior to any outfitter and guide physically providing services to passengers, the individual must have at least completed one trip on that section of waters and also have gone through training in different aspects, such as equipment preparation, understanding and recognizing river characteristics and hazards, and also rescue techniques and first aid.
Okay. Who do we have to speak to the amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
Can we bring up Phil and Marianne?
Yes.
Can I ask some questions?
Absolutely. I was hoping that you would guide us through these.
Yes.
So to speak.
I've got a throwback. I'd like to throw it somewhere. First question. For the record, is Orange Torpedo okay?
Senator Metzger, Chair Metzger, Senator Atkinson, we've sent the amendments as drafted to Dale Holsey, the owner of Orange Torpedo Rats, and got his buy-in. He emailed your office some comments. I checked with your staff to make sure that those comments were received, so you should find those in your bill file.
And you are Phil Donovan.
I am Phil Donovan on behalf of the Oregon Guides and Packers.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Hold on. Hold on just a minute. Okay. Let somebody else ask a question. I just saw this. Hold on.
I know. You need to hand me this.
Mm-hmm. Senator Atkins looking at other questions at the moment of any of our panelists. One of you might, Teresa's talked about the amendments, maybe you just briefly summarize how you got to, based on our original hearing, some of the issues and how you resolved them and what they do and why we have you in this forum.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mary Ann Guest, and I'm representing Julia Clark. It was her father that was killed in a fishing accident on the Rogue River, and we've had a very good conversation with and working relationship with Phil Donovan and the guides, and also with Paul, I'm going to say it right, Don Hefner, and the Marine Board. And I think whenever we came up with something that we couldn't quite get around, that Don was Paul was very helpful in bringing forth some amendments that work for everybody. And so Julia is very satisfied. Her family is very satisfied that this bill does the three things that she needed, that they felt was important to have done. All the people on the boat wear life jackets. They have a throw bag on board, and the guides are trained in whitewater rescue safety techniques. Those are the most important amendments, and we have those.
Thank you. And we'll return to Senator Atkinson.
Thanks. A throw bag in every kayak. Is that in the bill?
A throw bag in every kayak?
Yeah. Or in every guide.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkinson, I'm Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. I just received the amendments this morning and had a chance to review them. They look good. However, with regard to the orange torpedo question, the language in line 6 of the amendments is not quite as perfectly clear as it perhaps could be in order to make it absolutely clear that the orange torpedoes are out.
What would you recommend?
I would recommend on line 6 of the amendment that after the word is, we insert the word physically, and after operated by the outfitter guide or employee of the outfitter and guide, and then just continue it so that it's clear that the throw bag is required in a boat that is physically operated by the outfitter guide or employee, and that those self-paddled orange torpedoes are clearly out. It may seem like nitpicking, but
Mr. Chair, do you think Judy Hall is listening?
I can call her.
No, don't call her.
Okay.
Judy Hall?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because she listens, and if we make an amendment, if we add a line to an amendment, she'll be down on us.
Well, that's true. I think what we would do, though, if this, as we work this through here in the next few minutes, if this is the only line, we can have it inserted and pass it Thursday. I have no problem with that. But I want to make sure we don't have any other issues. So
right.
Go ahead, proceed.
Couple of knives. What's in the safety kit now, Phil?
Chair Metzger, Senator Atkinson, the issue is of knives. We took that out to our membership. There was significant resistance to mandating knives. There's a laundry list of items that may be needed under different circumstances, and the feeling was that to allow the professionals to determine and outfit their boats for the condition.
That's not in the dash.
Chair Metzger, Senator Atkinson, no.
Okay, training, the third thing on the list. Explain that to me.
Chair Metzger.
Are we making somebody very wealthy, or is it self-taught? What's the deal?
Senator Atkinson, part of our goal was to ensure that we wouldn't have mandated expensive tuition-based classwork required of new guides and outfitters, but rather that they be allowed to be done in-house. And we actually feel, in many respects, we've been able to strengthen the language of what was initially offered by the proponents by ensuring that the different conditions of waterways is taken into account depending upon whether they're rafting on the Deschutes or they're working on the Rogue or some other water in between.
Mr. Chair, that's actually fantastic. The reason is two things. One, I think you'll get higher compliance with the base knowledge of river rescue, and number two, for those who have a higher certification, they can command a little higher wages, they can differentiate their business that way. You know, I don't think you're going to go down the Upper Klamath without somebody that's fully certified, but I think that's fantastic. I'm great, thank you. I think those are great amendments to Orange Torpedo. And if we can do it right now, I'd do it right now.
I think it would be frowned upon, and since I can do this definitely on Thursday, I think I'll have it done properly rather than be taken to the woodshed.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You can go to the woodshed.
I know. Senator Mona Sanders, did you have some questions?
Yeah, this just applies to... thank you, Mr. Chair. This just applies to non-motorized boats entirely throughout the whole bill, correct?
And on class, that flow on class 3 rapids or higher, to be specific.
And I just need a little clarification on the last page of page 2 of the amendment. It says this section doesn't apply to motorized boats that are inspected by the United States Coast Guard. What does that mean?
Senator Metzger, or Chair Metzger, Senator Mona Sanderson, there was concern that was raised by outfitters, specifically the mail boats that are down on the Rogue. These are large motorized craft that run up and down the Rogue River through Class 3 and Class 4 rapids, and they already are covered under Coast Guard requirements, and they felt that that was adequate and did not want to be mandated to have PFDs, which can be bulky, when they're in a high-sided mail boat that, quite frankly, on hot summer days, they felt strongly that their customers would not want to be mandated to be wearing life preservers.
But it is a follow-up, but it is motorized.
That's correct.
And they're already required by law to have PFDs.
Perhaps I could respond to that. Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. The tour boats are inspected by the Coast Guard, and one of the conditions of their inspection is that when they're in Class 3 and higher rapids, they are required to wear a life jacket. So it's already covered. The other point that you made, does this only apply to non-motorized boats? Actually, the provision for wearing wearing a life jacket in Class 3 and higher would apply on uninspected motorized guides that are operating on rivers. So, and we think that's a very good idea. We have guides that operate on the lower Deschutes. They've got to go through some nasty water to get up to where they're steelhead fishing, and we think it's totally appropriate that passengers be instructed to don a life jacket for those few minutes that they're going through some of those rapids. So we think that's a good change.
Other questions? Okay, so I just want to clarify our amendment while everybody's in committee. So you suggest that on line 6, after the word is, we add the word physically. And then after operated, give me the language again.
By the outfitter, comma, guide, or employee of the outfitter and guide.
The outfitter, comma, guide, or
an employee of the outfitter and guide.
Or employee.
Or an employee.
Or an employee.
Of the outfitter and guide.
Of the outfitter and guide. Committee, would that resolve our issues for work session first thing Thursday? Okay. Then that's what we're going to do. Teresa, if you have that amendment done, and we will pass this out first thing on Thursday. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 579. Open a work session on Senate Bill 773. Teresa, you want to remind us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Committee members, Senate Bill 773 is brought to you by Senator Morissette on behalf of the Oregon State Police Drug Enforcement Division. We have our hearing on this on March 15th. It requires anyone who transmits money in an amount exceeding $2,000 to a location outside Oregon to supply a thumbprint on the form of the payment instrument, such as a wire transfer. It directs a money transmission licensee to retain records of the thumbprint and punishes violation of the licensee by a maximum of 1 year imprisonment, $6,250 fine, or both. There is a Dash 1 amendment in front of you, which is at the request of the Drug Enforcement Division, which changes the fingerprint requirement for many transmissions to locations within and outside Oregon.
Okay. And should we have the proponent of the Dash 1 amendment come forward? I assume that's you. Welcome.
Thank you, sir. My name is Craig Durbin. I'm a lieutenant with the Oregon State Police and commander of the Drug Enforcement Section, and Chair Metzger and members of the committee. The Dash 1 amendment was at the recommendation of counsel that in order to possibly comply, and I'm not an expert on this, but with the commerce law, that it should be to any location either inside or outside the state of Oregon if we're going to require any transmittal of outside the state of Oregon.
I think sometimes it might be difficult to know where some of those might be otherwise. Questions?
Senator Work Session?
Yes, sir.
Move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 773.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 773. Further discussion of the amendment? Any objection? So ordered.
Thank you, sir.
Senator Starr.
Senate Bill 773 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 773 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Objection. So ordered. Do we have anybody who would like to carry this bill? Author of it. Senator Morissette is the author, so let's request Senator Morissette to carry the bill. Okay, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 773, open up a work session on Senate Bill 879.
Right, Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 879 is from Senator Mona Sanderson. It modifies Oregon's strategic investment program by allowing cities, local governments to apply to the Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission to designate properties as a strategic investment zone. You have some Dash 1 amendments that were presented at our Hood River hearing on March 18th that clarifies the legislative intent of the bill.
Okay, thank you. And we have the proponent of the bill here. Why don't you come on forward? So if the committee has any questions, if you could identify yourself and committee members. We all were there for the hearing in Hood River, and we talked about some of these issues, and maybe you could just kind of encapsulize the amendment to the bill and what this does.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ron Papsdorf. I represent the city of Gresham. This bill really is an effort to streamline a good economic development program in the state of Oregon, the Strategic Investment Program, by allowing counties in cooperation with cities where there's a city present to establish upfront a strategic investment program zone, go through the public hearing process, set up the qualifying criteria ahead of time, and then promote that in areas where we're trying to create and attract traded sector jobs for the state of Oregon. The Dash 1 amendments were introduced at the request of Washington County to make it very clear that this mechanism is in addition to the current way of doing strategic investment plans, so that if a qualifying company wants to locate into an area that has not been designated an SIP zone, that they could go through the current program of establishing that a strategic investment plan.
Okay. Questions, Ron? Okay.
One question.
Mr. Yes, Senator Deckard.
Thank you. This is going to be a two-part one question. One is, or just two questions.
Or both.
One is, I assume you've met with all the folks from the department, and I guess Jim Craven in terms of AEA and the high-tech industry, and everyone nods that this is another tool
Mr. Chair, Senator Decker, that's correct. Everyone agrees that this, the Dash 1 amendments make it clear that this is just an additional mechanism for pursuing a strategic investment program and that the existing method stays exactly intact.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chair, I know we talked about a little bit about this in Hood River, but the other interest that I would have is ensuring that it's traded sector firms that are actually going to, and I know we've circled around the definition of traded sector firms in statute, and I don't know if there's anything you could clarify to ensure that when, if Gresham actually, and hopefully it does come to fruition, employs this, that we'll get just the kind of firms that we've been actually using the SIP to bring, and it wouldn't be something that, I don't know, because it's a property tax, if it even if you could, but you just want to make sure that it really is those traded sector firms that are property intensive.
Okay. Senator Metzger, Senator Deckert, the language clearly defines that they must be traded sector industries as defined in statute, and there is an agreement required between the county and the city to establish the qualifying criteria, and certainly at least Gresham's interest is in attracting high quality jobs to the East Multnomah County and the East Metro area in the Portland metro area, and so we would want those criteria especially to reinforce that and make sure that we're attracting to our industrial lands that are very limited in scope the kinds of industries and jobs that promote that.
Great. Thank you very much.
Other questions? Senator Montes.
I really don't have a question, just a comment. This is something that the city of Gresham feels strongly will help our spring water development, which we will hope to attract more than one traded sector. And evidently it's very laborious, very time-consuming to go through a strategic investment plan. And if we can make it easier on businesses that we want in our community to be a part of this, it will be really a boon, I think, in being an area can be very attractive to many businesses. So we might be able to get businesses that maybe we wouldn't be able to if they have to go through a strategic investment plan for each business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If I made sense.
Exactly. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. I do think this is a valuable tool, and my only comment would be, as Senator Deckert has weighed related types of issues in our revenue committee about, we provide different incentives and then the trade-offs for the tax revenue for the different districts, weighing the advantages and the disadvantages, and these are, of course, permissive tools for local governments to utilize, and I think that that is given careful thought in each circumstance, and the only thing I would say is that as we expand some of these opportunities, remind all of our local partners to be very cognizant of that weighting of the advantages and the disadvantages, but we're more than happy to provide the tools and trust their judgment that they know what's going to bring prosperity to their area. So thank you for your efforts on this, Senator Montes Anderson, and for championing that in the Senate side. I appreciate that very much. So we are in a work session with a Dash 1 amendment before us on Senate Bill 879.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Montes Anderson.
I move the Dash 1s to Senate Bill 879.
Senator Montes Anderson has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 879. Discussion on the amendment. Objection. So ordered. We'll stand at ease just for a moment. Teresa, would you see if Senator Starr is outside just in case he'd like to vote on this bill? And if not, we'll proceed. 879, we have passed the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 879, and now have the bill as amended before us.
Do you have a motion?
I'm waiting for one.
I move Senate Bill 879 as amended to the Senate floor to do pass.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 879 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Further discussion? Objection. So ordered. Senator Montes Anderson, if you would be kind enough to carry the bill to the floor, we'd appreciate it.
Would be delighted.
Members, Thursday is our last scheduled day for all but a very handful of bills for Senate bills in Senate business. As I mentioned before, we are likely to schedule our reconvening on Thursday at 4:30 or 5 o'clock to finish whatever bills. We have quite a stack to go through. A few of them may not make that cut, even though they're on that list. But if at all possible, we will try to move as judiciously as possible, unless we get to an issue that we can't resolve, and then we'll move through to other issues. But keep that in mind. We'll do the best we can on that.
Mr. Chair, just a point of information. The general government is doing the exact same thing, and so I will likely need to be in two places at once on Thursday afternoon.
I actually am coordinating with the other, because I know, for example, three of the committee members have other committees. So we are
category.
Yes. we're coordinating.
We will demonstrate to the public how multitasking we all will be on Thursday. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.